Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Tech Connect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Riverman.
Dean, you were in sales once, right?
Yep, I was, long, long ago.
Long, long ago. Yeah, same here. Actually, it's not as long ago as I would have liked.
Yeah.
But did you feel like you were very good at diving into your accounts? Were you
diving into accounts? Yes, I thought that was really, really important.
Good.
Yes, you know, the farming, right? The farming of accounts and stuff like that.
Yeah, farming, deep selling, penetration, digging in. I don't know what you want to call it, but that's going to be our topic today.
Yep, really important.
We have Luke Welberding with us from Elo. He's going to talk to us a little bit about that idea of deeper selling, penetrating accounts, digging in a little bit beyond just the surface and the basics.
I love this topic. Because it is timely right now.
Exactly. Especially as you're planning out a new year potentially and getting ready to figure out what your account strategy is going to look like.
So 100%.
Yep. All that in our usual value to the VAR and Tech Connect with us. It is time for us to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. It's time to get connected.
All right. As I said, our guest today is Luke Welberding. Luke is the Senior Director for North American Field Sales with Elo. Luke, thank you so much for being on the show with us today. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, what's your day-to-day like at Elo, and how did you get to where you are?
Sure. Appreciate it. So again, Luke Welberding. I'm the Senior Director of North America Sales. I started out years ago as a tech nerd. I'd call it a systems admin. Love taking stuff apart, putting it back together. And I found myself working for a bank, and the bank said, hey, every year we're going to give you a 2 or 3% raise. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, I can calculate this. By the time I'm retired, I'd only made this amount. And I looked at a sales guy and he says, well, I make this. I said, I've got to become a salesperson. And I'm a tech guy. At that point, I was a little, should I be a sales guy or not? I didn't know. But through that, I got a job at Compaq, moved on to Hewlett Packard, and from there, 15 years ago, I started with Elo, but I'll tell you, I have a foundation in technology and have loved it ever since.
Nice. You know, we've talked about that before. I feel like most of our guests at some point in their life was just like a tech head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they didn't necessarily it's not like anyone's grown up saying like, I can't wait to be a sales rep for a technology company or whatever. I
mean, maybe that doesn't happen.
But I'd say for the most part, people are just someone who's engaged and love technology. Yep. Maybe you love science, just like the idea of this stuff. And it very much leads into this kind of a
you kind of have to because it gets really frustrating really fast if you don't have some affinity towards technology, right?
Agreed.
Because now you're dealing with all this electronic stuff, and it's like, what? You know, if that's not connecting with you, probably not the right industry to be in. But anyway,
exactly.
That's really interesting, Luke. And we were chatting a little bit earlier. You spent a little bit of time in Chicago, right? Behind you there.
I did a tour through Chicago. Still a Cubs fan today. Wish the Bears were a little further along or made it. But needless to say, I moved to sunny Phoenix, Arizona. I'm no longer shoveling snow.
Oh, and, man.
You don't shovel sunshine, so loving it out here.
There you go.
Yeah, I can get behind that. I know if I ever make that move at some point, it's going to be one of those kind of places where it's just sunny
all the time. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
There's a lot to be said for that.
Exactly. All right. Well, Luke, you mentioned when you talked about getting into sales that part of the reason you did it is because, hey, the money's a little bit better.
Yeah.
But we all know also that in order to be successful at sales and get that kind of money and get maybe the nice commissions and bonuses that might come with your job, you've got to be willing to do a little bit more than just the basic selling. I think it's easy to pick up a phone and answer a call and somebody says, hey, I want to order X, and you punch it in and send them that order. That's fine. You know, it's even kind of easy to do to upsell and suggest something to say, okay, well, hey, since you bought that monitor, can I sell you a power cord to go with it? You know, do you need the power strip that goes with it or whatever, you know, or a stand or something like that? That stuff I think is easy, but I think what we're going to talk about is a little deeper than that. You know, how to actually get into your accounts and start diving in, understanding more about the needs of your customers, what really works for them, and where you can maybe find opportunities that just picking up that phone and answering a simple sales order is not going to get you to. So, Luke, well, let's kick things off by I kind of want you to explain a little bit of your interpretation of that difference between the top level selling. Is it similar to what I said, or is there other things that you think of when you think of that deeper account penetration and deeper selling?
Well, I would say I start with people buy from people. So you have to begin with individual, I'm here to help. And as you work with the accounts that either are signed or you find, you've got to understand what those needs and wants are. And certainly one need leads to another. So you've got to start somewhere. And you just have to knock it out of the park. You have to be the person that's there for them, always available, just ready to help. And then I call it deep and wide, how to sell deep and wide. So once you've got a foothold, once you know the right person to talk to, the next step is to figure out who everybody else is. How do I map that organization? How do I understand if I call it the carpeted areas? I'm selling point of sale in the carpeted area. Well, let's think through self-order, self-checkout, price checkers. What are all the applications in that carpeted area? But then I got to think, though, there's a warehouse area. So what am I doing behind that? And who's responsible? Who's doing marketing? Who's doing brand messaging? How does that start to relate to technology and an environment? But that gets into this deep and wide. And I feel we can talk through Miller Hyman. There's lots of different techniques that are out there. But all in all, it's really just about knowing your customer and listening. And that's a big fact that I think some people miss on. It's just listening to their customer and helping to navigate. Because every new area that you can bring into your organization, your resale environment, most people in tech don't talk to the marketing folks, but the marketing teams oftentimes have a need to get their brand inside of a store. Don't let the agencies go sell that. And if you are an agency, God bless you. But everybody should be out talking to these different groups and trying to figure out how to add value across the board. Because oftentimes it's the same product. It just might be used in a different way. So I want to stop there.
No, that's really good stuff, actually. And in if I could parlay on some of the things that you were just talking about there, Luke, because I'm with you when you talk about, you know, old school selling and some of the, you know, traditional ways of doing it. And of course, I kind of came up and cut my teeth in selling, and it was all about trying to get to the decision maker. And it was this idea that it was one individual. You know, if you can just get that one person to say yes, you know, you're in and stuff like that. But Luke, talk to us a little bit, because I love where you're going with this deep and wide. I could not agree more. In today's world, and you can read books about this, there's the Challenger Sale book and stuff like that, where there are actually a minimum of 4 to 5, I think is what that book preaches, 4 to 5 decision makers usually within any one given sales process. So, Luke, talk to us a little bit about that. I mean, when you're going into an account, right, I mean, you're trying to get to know multiple different, departments and get to know people within those departments, because they're all influencing the sale today, right?
They are. So a lot of it is that beginning motion is your initial contact. You're building trust. Again, going back to that people buys from people. But once you've built that trust and rapport, it's asking for the next level or the next layer or the sideways move to a different department. But I would say you can't do it. And again, there's strategy involved here, but you want to be careful, because someone's just not going to open the doors to the kingdom right away. You've got to build that rapport. And then once you're comfortable, you've got to ask for the next layer. Why have I done right by you? Did you get what you needed? Let's have a quick meeting with the CIO. I'm eager to share what we can really do. Or it's about budget. Let's talk to the CFO and figure out how together we can create a 2 to 3 year strategy that gets your business where you want it to be. But there's different ideas here. And then certainly, as you mentioned, those stakeholders, I love the technologists. I love to geek out and really work with people on technology, but there's always the people that are driving the business direction and strategy. And you've got to be able to relate to these different people at these different levels and understand and listen to say, what are you looking for? What problem are you trying to solve? And then build that trust and rapport. And I tell my team, you want a seat at the table. And once you've achieved that seat at the table, you're helping navigate now to achieve what they are trying to accomplish as a company or what their strategic goals might be. And that's well beyond just trying to get them the next widget or cable. It's saying, how do I become this true partner that solves problems for you, brings the right people to the table and expertise? And again, those types of motions earn you that seat. It earns you that first look at that next deal. It earns you that confidence to be introduced to that next department, that next opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when you think about penetration, you got to have a holistic kind of approach to the account. Mm-hmm. I can tell you a story that, you know, and it's interesting. Actually, in a previous life that I had, we sold Elo displays. And one of our customers that we were going after was one of the major horse selling firms down in Lexington. And, you know, and so we thought we had the right people in the room that were making the decision, because what we were proposing to them at the time, and this is about, whatever, 10 years ago or so, was doing interactive touchscreen at the horse sale. Because if you've ever been to one, they call them hips. You can actually pull up videos so that you can see the horse running and stuff like that. Well, they wanted to make that interactive, and they wanted to do a touchscreen. So we thought we had all the right people in the room, the president and all the decision makers. But really, one of the main influencers in this particular deal were the people that were going to be operating, you know, down on the floor, if you will, operating the video and the whole mechanism. And it actually came down to their decision of what we were going to use and the technology that we were going to use. So, you know, it makes sense when you're trying to sell. You got to go deeper or wide to get to know all the people. And then when you're in an opportunity, same thing there. Don't think that you have everybody maybe in the room that you need to have in the room. Mm. Keep probing. Keep asking those questions to get a little deeper and wider. Would you agree, Luke? You know, it's not developing them as a prospect, but also when you got that opportunity.
And you're making a really good point here. It's the technique of asking that next question. So I always stop, take the pause, and am I discussing what you want me to discuss? And they'll give me an answer, and I'm going to follow up on whatever they said and ask yet another question and continue to probe. And that gets into the technique of just how to learn and understand your customer. But yes, I mean, all in all, it's about that listening. And I'd also say it's just failing to prepare is preparing to fail. And I think we've all heard this before. But when you're in front of that customer, you've got to know what product or technology you're talking about. To again go back to what we discussed and say, earn that trust, earn that respect, get that next opportunity for an introduction. And there's different ways to know that product. One is I can become the expert on hundreds of different products and platforms. The other way is to make sure you're bringing in the experts that truly know it. Because I think some people get caught up in the idea that they have to know everything to add value. And I think that's far from the truth. You just have to know everyone that does know the things you need to know to add that value. And make sure you're bringing the right people to the discussion. And it's okay to not know an answer. It's not okay not to get back to them with the answer. It's just, again, I think it goes back to the basics. And those basics are so important and key during the times that we're going through right now.
Yeah, and if I could pick up on that, during the times that we're in right now, couldn't agree with you more there, which is why I like how you opened up saying that, you know, the listening portion of it and the helping to navigate. Look, right now, if you have customers, these are the ones that you want to go deeper and wider. Mm-hmm. If you're playing in hospitality, retail, and those industries that have been hit really, really hard, we're all praying that hopefully within the next 6 months or so, as the vaccine starts to roll out, maybe some life comes back to some of these businesses. They're going to have questions. They're going to need, you know, answers and stuff like that. So the deeper and the wider that you can get in front of these organizations and helping them to develop the solutions, it's very timely right now. Yeah. You know, if you have those customers, if you have those relationships, you really got to leverage them right now.
Yeah, I agree. You know, to kind of jump back for a moment to the use case that you mentioned with the horse farm.
Yeah.
Farm.
Mm, yep.
It kind of goes back a little bit to that conversation we had on a previous episode, the effective selling strategies and presentations.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about the TUFA method, which was something I learned in my last sales gig from a company out of Chicago, Impax, who had this idea of doing presentations based around the concept of them, us, fit, action, mm-hmm. which is a kind of simple when you think about it, but it was just kind of putting a terminology to it that it could help you remember this when you were creating presentations. And the them part was always something they hit on, like, hey, there's a reason we start here because this is the most important thing. If the person you are talking to does not feel like you understand them and their mm-hmm. business and what they're trying to accomplish, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter how cool all the rest of your stuff is and how many products you've got to show and how amazing your presentation is. If they don't think you understood them, it means nothing. Mm-hmm. And that was an example of that where you didn't realize that the people who actually mattered here were the people who were going to have to use this technology every day.
Yep.
So, you know, even if they're not the people you ultimately end up talking to and selling to, mm-hmm. I think if you're in front of the so-called decision makers are the people that are actually going to sign those checks and give you that PO at least. Mm-hmm. And you can tell them, hey, I spent time with the people that will be using this every day. Mm-hmm. Here's what they loved about this. Here's where they said they were having issues. And here's how our stuff can help. Mm-hmm. That's all comes together into just one nice little selling sphere, yep. I think, to put it all together.
Yeah.
So, Luke, I guess my next question for you is, I'm as a field salesperson, I'm sure you spend plenty of time out and about with reps from various resellers and people that are out there trying to sell. It may bring you in as kind of the expert. You know, are there things sometimes that you see them doing right or wrong when you're out on visits or on calls with them, things where you think, man, this is where you have an opportunity to do something a little bit different than you are. And either maybe you jump in to dive deeper yourself or maybe kind of sit back and think, that I would have done that a little bit differently. You know, what goes well and what doesn't go well for you?
I mean, the number one for me is I'll call it all go, no, no. And it's no knowledge of what your customer actually wants to hear about.
Yep.
Some people have a tendency to step into a meeting, make some quick introductions, and want to hit just play on their talk track and presentations. And that whole all go's got to slow, because reality is you need to understand what the customer really wants to hear about or listen or understand or make a problem statement to you so you can address that through the process. And I would liken it to conversational selling. This is something that I think is just so important. It's asking those questions. It's one-on-one stuff, though, but you'd be amazed at how many people don't kind of follow that track of listen to your customer, ask those questions, make sure everyone in the room's involved, because the person that's not talking in back, you might not realize that's the CIO. You might not understand it. So take the time to ask questions. Am I hitting what you're looking for? And then ask that next question. But and storytelling is another thing that customers to relate to what other customers are relating to, let's say, or industry knowledge. We know from NRF this week that convenience was a big piece there. So bring some of that knowledge to those meetings and share those stories or other use cases. But people get so entrenched in their product and specs. That's just it's a non-starter unless your customer's really asking for it, saying, I needed to double click down on this piece of technology and really help me share and understand it. That's an ask. You fulfill that. But reality, they're just trying to get a better feel. They want to know, is that third eye in your head going to stay there all the time, or does it go away after a while? Is this someone I really want to work with? Because people buy from people. But I guess to answer that question, it's just hit the pause. Make sure you're relating to your customer, explaining what they want to learn about, and answering those questions. And then furthermore, and this, again, is the basic, so many people don't ask for the business. Did I explain to you what you wanted to hear about today? Did I knock it out of the park? How would you rate me today? Am I someone you would want to work with more? I got 1,000 of these guys, but reality is you've got to ask for that business. You really, truly do have to close and then ask permission to the next step. What is that next step? Because if you don't know what it is, your customer might not know either. So give them the option. Is the next step for this me sending in a sample? Would you like me to bring the manufacturer in? Did I answer all your questions? Do you want to buy this today? But those, again, it comes back to the basics. And we're doing all these basics virtually, which means that many times they're much more important to make sure you're kind of following likely what you prepared for that meeting ahead of time.
Yeah.
And let's maybe dive a little deeper there, because, you know, we've talked a little bit about how selling has had to have changed here over the last year with this pandemic. I mean, it's just not, I totally agree with you, Luke. You know, people buy from people, and, you know, a year ago, selling was much more interpersonal than it is today. Are there some learnings, and I know I'm hitting you with a little bit of a curveball here, but are there any learnings that you've come across over this last year about, you know, how do you do this in an online environment? Have you had to tweak your techniques and how you approach an opportunity and or a new prospect just because everything's now online and via this video stuff that we're doing here today? So any tips that you're willing to divulge here, or learnings?
Well, I'll share with you my personal experience here. I'm in my own Elo command center. I've got multiple monitors in front of me. I've got technology, the never before seen, you know, new Elo backpack. I've got all this stuff in front of me. When I go to a customer site, I am not sitting in my command center. I don't have hundreds of presentation materials. I don't have easy access to websites. I don't have the picture books and storytelling right in front of me. There's so much opportunity now in terms of virtual selling if people are prepared for the process. I've got lighting now in my office. I make sure that the microphone's tuned. I did wear pants to this meeting. just some of the basics. But in all, if you're prepared for virtual selling, it creates an opportunity to be extremely prepared. Because if you ask me a question about a product, I can pull a spec sheet up in a minute. If you said, hey, what do you do for this particular QSR? Or have you done this in retail? I can show you pictures of what we've done within a minute, because it's all sitting in front of me in my command, my selling command center, my cockpit of success. So if people create these types of environments to be successful, I think it's incredible what you can do.
Yeah, not just resources like that, but I imagine you can even tap in, you know, via Zoom or something like that. Let's say you have a product support specialist or something like that that you need to dial in. You can do that, you know, now instantly. So I like where you're going, leveraging the resources that you have and being prepared in that sense to do that. Really smart. That's interesting.
And I love the idea of what you're talking about here, because I feel like most people in sales, when the pandemic was really hitting and we started going lockdowns and it became apparent that, look, we're not going to get out in front of people anymore.
Right.
There was this pervasive sense of doom and gloom in the sales world of, oh, great. If I can't get in front of people, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't do this, my job, the same way. I'm not going to be as good at it. But I think kind of to your point, you suddenly realize, like, hey, I have so much more information at my fingertips that I never normally. Yes, there is always something to being able to shake someone's hand, look them in the eye, and have that face-to-face contact and some of those context clues that come with body language and being in person with somebody. I get that. But at the same time, you have so many tools and tricks at your disposal. You know, your command hub, as you mentioned, this idea of all this stuff that you can access. What you said, being able to, if you're on a call and say, hey, you know what? I don't know as much about that question you asked, but my product manager does. Let me see if I can get him on the call right now. Yeah. That's not something you might be able to do when you're out in the field with
somebody. Not when you're cold calling or, you know, developing a prospect or something like that. You know, it would be very hard to do, I would think. Yeah.
So, I like that attitude of this doesn't have to be a negative. This doesn't have to be my sales are going to suffer because of this. It's just, hey, I got to take a different attitude about it. And in fact, maybe some stuff's actually even easier and cooler and better because I get to do it from home. And hey, maybe looking ahead, and I know we're going to talk a little bit about planning for the future here, when you do get back out there on the road again, maybe this means you find ways to take some of these cool tools along with you now that, you know, you're out there in the field with ready access and better access. Maybe companies help people get better access to the tools they need while they're on the go so that they can kind of replicate that experience of what they were doing in their office, but do it on the road as well.
Yeah, right.
So
absolutely.
And I'll just add one other comment that, and certainly getting back to traveling, I think there's a lot of salespeople that are sitting at their desk saying, when can we travel again? But I also believe that virtual and the idea that our cameras are on, that we're talking, we're building this rapport, this relationship, is going to continue. Because imagine now I can go meet someone 1 week, but I can still be on the phone looking at them 2 days later, and it's not weird anymore. It's not unusual. It's, hey guys, we're kind of cameras on nowadays. And I've been on meetings with huge organizations, and there's 15, 20 people across their entire company with all their cameras on. So I think this is an opportunity to really continue to change the way we sell and can add that additional value through every conversation, because I can bring this operation and communication for the long term, let's say.
Yeah. You know, it's so important you mentioned that about the camera thing too, because I think on one of our earliest podcasts, I think when we had Cordy maybe in with us, and we were talking a little about marketing and dealing with, you know, the digital world that we were suddenly has kind of encroached upon us more than usual. And this idea came up of, hey, when you were in the office back in the day, and you were on a conference call that could include video, did you ever actually turn your video on? No.
No.
Most people didn't. How many times did you get on a conference call where there was like 15 blanks, you know, pictures or initials up on the screen,
right,
and maybe one person had their camera on? Yeah. But now I feel like you're right. Everybody does it, even though we still don't have to.
No. Right.
There's plenty of calls you can get in where no one cares whether you're actually on camera or not.
Yeah.
But you're right. We've become so much more comfortable with it because it's become something we've had to do from time to time.
The
so we all realize,
has changed.
You know, this isn't a big deal.
Yeah.
It's fine if I flip that open and actually get on camera.
And thank you to all those that had those it fails, if you will, with kids in the background and dogs jumping on them. And
to realize that wasn't an issue. And people just
don't
care.
Not a big deal. Yeah. Not a big deal. But I love where you're going, Luke, because, yeah, I mean, you can still be, if you're prepared, if you still have the information, if you present yourself professionally, you can still get a lot accomplished. And actually, John, I mean, we talked about how, when you think about it, travel, you know, there were some articles out there talking about how, you know, certain sales have pivoted to the sense that they've really increased the amount of prospecting that they're trying to do. And the reason why is because obviously travel, while it's good, and yes, there's good to the face-to-face and the handshaking and stuff like that. Let's face it, it takes time, though. That takes, whereas a non-traveling sales individual can really 10x, whatever the multiplier is, getting in front of people in a virtual environment. Whereas,
well, imagine, you know, that 4 hours on a plane you might spend.
Exactly.
A day,
yeah.
That
yeah.
you could spend instead actually making some phone calls or having some meetings online.
Right. Whereas, you know, the meeting you can still have, that hour you can still have in a virtual environment. But now you've just freed up whatever 15 other hours out of a 2 day that it may have taken you to travel back and forth to go after additional prospects or go a little bit deeper, as we're talking about here today, penetrate some accounts a little bit more with the time that you have. So yeah, there's some advantages you can take care
definitely.
Of
definitely.
Yeah,
so productivity is a big one, and I just want to just that productivity piece.
Yep.
The one speed bump, I'll call it, or trap you can fall into is that I get x number of hours back a day because I'm not traveling. Just make sure you keep those hours and you use them for selling. Absolutely for selling. Don't get wrapped around, I can do more reporting, I can do more internal stuff, or people know I'm sitting at my desk, so I can do more forecasting. The focus has to remain on the selling piece. And that's the only thing. I just wouldn't give up my time knowing that I'm getting paid to sell because I have more of it. I need to keep my focus on that selling piece. And it's just a thing for other organizations to consider.
And let's talk, if we could go down another little path that I made a note as you were talking, Luke, because, again, John and I have been out of the sales realm and for about a decade or so. And I can remember back, you know, one other piece, and we're talking a little bit about it here on the prospecting side and or trying to find out more about accounts that you have. Back in the day that we didn't have LinkedIn, or at least I didn't have LinkedIn. We had, when I started getting into out of selling, it was a little thing called Jigsaw, which was, I guess, a predecessor to Salesforce. And, you know, if you uploaded your business cards, you would get credits and you could see other people's business cards of, you know, accounts.
I actually do not even know about this.
Oh, I know. I know. I'm going back into like the early 2000s or the late 90s, I guess, at this point in time. But anyway, I think that with tools like LinkedIn, your ability to find out who the people are within an organization is there.
Yeah.
And you can, if you're trying to go deeper into an account or if you're just trying to prospect new accounts, that is a tool that has got to be gold. I don't know, Luke. I mean, you know, from a technique standpoint, what are some other ideas, or if there are other ideas outside of LinkedIn to help individuals try to get deeper with who do they contact? You know, what are some of those things that you've been doing?
So certainly the LinkedIn is it's a key focus for us, because I know with the number of connections I have specific to an industry, I can see other people. And I said, well, likely that's the person that's out communicating and talking to others. So I would say that as any selling organization, they should have a social strategy that says, okay, profile should look like this. I'm representing the company. And then understand how to navigate different aspects, because I might see an individual on the right-hand bar, I might see all the people they know. So I think there's some basic things in LinkedIn. We also leverage tools like IHL, some other research tools that help map the industry for us and help us understand aging product materials, what ISVs someone might be working with, just different aspects of that business. And then it still goes back to financials or looking at what a company might be investing in or where their growth was seen over the last quarter or multiple quarters. But some of just, again, these are the basic things. But I would, again, go back to the selling tools like LinkedIn with the ability to connect multiple dots amongst people. And truthfully, many get lists for NRF, and it lists the title and it lists the company. And this is a little tip, but you just take that information, drop it in a Google search, you're going to get the name. and it's going to pop up in five different tools. So the ability to find people is minimized. You can find just about anybody. I think the key here is that how do you take those tools and information to build that connection and get to talk to the customer? And that's still a...
Yeah. I also liked where you were earlier, though, asking the question. One of the techniques I used to love is just ask somebody. If you're having a meeting with somebody about, even if you're not really in a sales mode, you're just kind of talking about, you know, solutions that could be and stuff like that, I would always ask, so who else within your organization might be involved in something like this? And you don't, you know, you can ask for the warm handoff. It doesn't really matter. I would walk out of there and, oh, now I got a name, right, and I know who to get to. So, right, Luke, you can always ask. There's nothing wrong with
who
asking.
Who else do you recommend I talk to? Yeah. A simple question, yeah.
Let's go with the, I'll go a step further on the basics, but people buy from people. So I can tell you that through all the tools that we leverage as a sales organization, we can find just about anybody, figure out the decision makers to a point. But the reality is it's our partners, it's other manufacturers, it's those relationships and being good to our partners, good to our ecosystem players that help connect this broader ecosystem. Because if I did right as ELO by a particular VAR and partner, would they be willing to make that other introduction? I'll tell them who I want to talk to because I can find that information easily. And then the flip side, VAR should be asking us manufacturers to say, hey, who else do you know? How else can we walk into these different accounts? But that type of activity, there's so much information and data out there now. But again, going back to the basic relationship stuff, I think is under-leveraged to a point.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, let's jump back over to this idea of the whole deep selling and account penetration. And I want to ask you one question about, is there really any difference in how you approach those conversations or how you approach this deeper selling between a new customer or a customer that's been established forever? If you're going in brand new to somebody that you've never talked to before and you want to, you know, you want to learn as much as you can about them from the beginning and get as deep as possible, or do you dial it back for a little bit until you have that established relationship versus what does that look like for somebody you've been in business with for 20 years?
Again, these are my opinions, but my opinion is you've got to earn the trust of that new customer. I need to go in, I need to wow them. It's fair game to say all the things that you're capable of doing, as well as sharing ideas, but don't get over your, you know, too in front of your skis kind of thing, because reality is you go too far and you might turn them off. And so I like to take an approach where for new customers and prospects, I'm just gonna hit it out of the park. I'm gonna overwhelm them with my responsiveness, the information and the thoroughness of what I provide. And once I've provided that, I'm gonna ask how I did. And once I get that confirmation that, wow, Luke, you've done really well, then that's my next question. Let me just track that. That connects to this. Can we talk about that? Or that works with that. Or I know within your organization, your warehousing and e-commerce environments are enormous. What type of mobile or technology is leveraged there? And so it gives you that ability once you've built that trust. And then as you work towards these existing relationships, I know so-and-so, we used to go fishing, we bowl together. That's a lot easier to navigate, but it becomes just, their time is important. So how do you quickly get to the point? I'd like to know this, this, and this. And I think it's just optimizing your communication with your key points once you know those customers, because then you can be a really valued partner because you're so efficient helping them navigate, get to the true need, and then, of course, bringing the right people to the table to solve those problems or requests. But again, just in summary, I look at a new customer as I like to earn their respect, their trust, and then ask for permission to sell deeper and wider into that account. Those things could be earned within days, or it could take weeks, it could take longer. And certainly your efforts and your ability to close and ask for that next step is important. And then furthermore, just when I'm selling deeper into accounts where I have those relationships, I want to be quick and efficient and to the point. And those customers, they know me. And we'll respect that I'm really just trying to help them and get to the bottom of where we can grow the business together.
One thing that I'd like to add here is, and I agree with everything that Luke just said, one thing that I was struck by, though, is that, you know, another thing that in sales individuals, and hopefully there's a connection here, because you and I are both proponents of sales teams working with marketing teams. Yep. And I think that marketing, depending on the size of the organization, it doesn't have to be a big organization where you've got large sales teams and large marketing teams. This could be on the small reseller level where you have an individual individual or maybe two people that are tasked with doing marketing. But what I'd like to throw on the table is account-based marketing. It's a little bit of a buzzword right now, or a buzz acronym, ABM, in the world of marketing. But the idea here is that once you get an account or some knowledge of an account, to do some marketing within that account to try to get deeper and wider, using marketing techniques, letting marketing help with the nurturing, if you will, of that account by raising brand awareness, raising solution awareness, stuff like that, through the use of digital marketing techniques and stuff like that. So I would be an advocate, if a reseller is not doing that today, it's something that they should consider doing. And that's a way that marketing and sales can work together, is when sales is out there prospecting, doing everything that Luke just said. You know, you want to make sure you're earning their trust and outperform early, and absolutely amen, and you will win doing that kind of stuff. But it also wouldn't hurt to get your marketing team involved, because they can start softening some beachheads for you on other people within that account, so that you can go deeper and wider. And it's not just, who are you or what is your company? I have no idea who you are. You know, they can, marketing can pepper them with some information and stuff like that. So anyway, I think that that's a sophisticated way of kind of attacking an account, using multiple resources within a company. So with the whole idea of getting deeper, wider within it.
Yeah, very much so. Well, I've actually got an extra thought on that, but I will save that, because I kind of want to ask our kind of sort of final question here, which is, you know, looking ahead, Luke, to 2021, to this year. You know, we are in January right now, and I imagine most people in sales are kind of, you know, getting things together for the new year, planning out the year ahead, starting to think about their strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk to some of them and think, hey, if you're somebody that's still working out your strategy for this year and you're thinking, all right, what's my plan? I know I'm going to spend at least the next several months, potentially half the year or more, working at a distance and not being able to get in front of my customers still. You know, what should they be thinking about and doing when planning ahead for this year as it relates to that deeper account selling and getting deep and wide into the accounts that they already have?
When, and you mentioned, you kind of narrowed it. So if we're really looking at accounts that you already have an established relationship, I look at it to say, what are going to be the important key factors through fiscal 21? And we mentioned earlier convenience. What does that mean for a retailer, as an example? It likely means buy online, pick up in store, curbside. There's probably a play for mobility. It's going to look at back end, micro fulfillment, shipping. What does that entail? I need printers, labelers. I need some level of tech. I might need software, and certainly wrapping this all in services. But I look at the broader industry and say, where's the money going to be spent? What areas of the customers that I cover? Because if I'm looking at QSR, I'm thinking kitchen automation. I'm thinking driver different ways that those QSRs are going to continue to work with the environment as restaurants front ends are likely closed. Drive-through technology, timers, there's a plethora of different things that through our macroeconomic environment, I can look back and say these types of customers or my customers need these types of things. Let me go talk to them. But it's doing a little bit of research. It's understanding where things are going, where people are spending their budgets, and then looking internally to say, how can I address these needs that are emerging? Certainly, there's still the ongoing needs, but we know that there are emerging touch points. And those emerging areas are where real value can be provided, because you have this existing relationship. They're going to call you if they need another X. But where you could add that value is to say, Mr. Customer, they're looking, things are starting to look at Y. How are you preparing for this? Self-checkout, minimum wages going up in New York. It already went up in Seattle. How are minimum wages going to affect retail hospitality? And what ways are we seeing technology? And again, I can continue to go on, but you see the talk track here. It's understanding all the different types of applications, current and emerging, and looking at those trends to make sure you're prepared to bring value, not at the next thing they want to buy, because you got that nailed. It's where they should be going, what additional value you can bring on ideas, ideation, and innovation.
Nailed it.
Awesome.
Consultative selling. Yeah. That's, you know, is what I would put it, some of that in the category of that. Yeah, really good point.
Yeah. Well, and you hit on, and this kind of will tie a little bit back to what I was going to talk about with marketing, things that I actually kind of felt was important to me when I was in sales, because I would never say I was a great salesperson. There's a reason why I'm not in sales anymore, that I'm doing a podcast, you know, because selling was never really my thing. But something I always enjoyed doing was sharing information and helping people, right, you know, learn about new stuff. And I think you've kind of talked about it, this idea of like what you learn from NRF or what might be coming up in trade publications or stuff that's in the buzz in the news. There's so much value, I think, to being able to go to people that you're customers with or that are your customers and tell them, hey, I came across this cool story or article, or hey, did you hear about what was happening with this? Is that something that concerns your business? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes with some salespeople think, if I'm talking to my customer, it's got to be because I'm trying to sell them something. Like, it doesn't have to be.
No, right.
It could be because you just want to tell them about something you're hearing about and you're curious what their thoughts are. You're presenting yourself as this thought leader, as somebody who understands their business, who wants their insight and brings them some insight. And I think that's the kind of stuff that creates that valuable relationship and connection where someone thinks of you as, this is someone who's an expert in this industry. Mm-hmm. When, you know, I have a question or I want to understand or learn a little bit more about what's going on with this, that's the person I'm going to think to, yep, go to first, because they were already talking to me about this a year ago. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this before.
Yep.
So then when you combine that with the marketing side of things,
yeah,
your marketing team is probably also those kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
They are probably a little bit ahead of the curve. Mm-hmm. They're looking forward. They're thinking about what's coming in the future. Mm-hmm. They're paying attention to trends. I'm always reading what's happening. Even though I don't always know everything there is to know about all of our industries, I try to have some touch points here and there, some newsletters I'm subscribed to, and keep a little bit of, you know, connection with what's, mm-hmm, going on out there. Mm-hmm. And your marketing team also is probably usually planning ahead, mm-hmm, for at least a quarter ahead, if not an entire year, of their plans for marketing and where they think they're going to want to attack and put out messages. And if you know what that is,
yeah, leverage that
as a salesperson.
Yeah.
How amazing is that? If at the same time your marketing team is putting out all this messaging around, like, let's say what's happening in retail, what's happening in convenience, as you mentioned, a whole month all about stuff going on in convenience. At the same time, you're out there calling all your customers who might have received all that kind of marketing, you know, paraphernalia, mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm, messages and newsletters, mm-hmm, and emails. And you're talking about that as well. You're just reinforcing this idea that,
yeah,
as a company, we get convenience. We know it's important to you, and we want to talk to you about it. That's, well, just a whole just synergy you create.
You've just enabled yourself as a salesperson, right? Where Luke started the whole thing off by saying, you know, people buy from people.
Yep.
Couldn't agree more. As long as you're genuine about it, you know, and that's, well, you know, I'm just going to give you this information because I'm really out for this for me.
Right.
You know, if you're not that type of a person in developing the rapport, that's a good tip.
Like, here's a cool case study about this. You want to buy this?
Yeah, right.
Like, if that's where your email ends, you're doing it wrong. If it's a case study, yeah, I thought you might want to read.
Yeah.
And then 6 weeks later, when you're in a conversation about something else, hey, remember that case study I showed you? I'm like, by the way, we have a cool product that actually does that. Let me talk to you a little bit about it. It's two very different things.
Yeah, I laugh about it, but there are people out there that
I know.
And I know it's in that bad represent or bad salesperson category, yep, where, yeah, here's a case study. Do you want 10 of these?
Yeah.
What?
Where'd do you want 10 from? Of this thing you haven't even read about yet? So.
Yeah, and I like where you guys are. There's a little bit of patience here too, because as you talk about innovation and where things are going, yeah, you gotta make a quota today, but you gotta be filling your bucket for tomorrow. And that's making sure you're talking through FY21 budget, 22. Our price checkers on the budget for this year, is it next to the year after? But you can start to map out a 6, a 12, a 24 type month plan based on the primary technologies in an environment. And then you can furthermore start to map to say, what types of innovation are you looking at further? And it's probably not your store operations guy, as an example, in retail. It's likely someone who's dedicated to innovation, the old term of omni-channel or marketing or other. And this is the deep and wide. You've got to be able to spread the wings to look at filling that bucket for the future. And then one other comment, manufacturers have lots of material. So I like this track of, how do I provide information to my customers? And if you haven't gone and found someone that's got cool products and said, hey, have you already built some one pagers, or do you have something, a slick that I can send out, or information to help further enable my messaging to my customer base, you're doing yourself a disservice, because there are resources out there that can help you.
Yep, definitely.
Amen.
Well, that actually kind of goes into our next segment about value to the VAR. But before we do that, I do want to pause, as always, and thank our Tech Connect members, of which Elo is one. We very much appreciate your support for our show. We literally could not do this without you. This fantastic studio wouldn't happen without you. And you know, Dean and I appreciate because we enjoy doing this.
That's right.
But hey, if you have any thoughts about deeper selling or getting wide or some cool tips and techniques that you have or questions you might have, please reach out. You can find us on Twitter at TechConnectPod. You can also email us techconnect@bluestarinc.com. All right. Well, as mentioned, we're going to wrap things up with our recurring segments. We start off with value to the bar. This is where we kind of take our conversation, wrap it up in a nice little package, put a bow on it, and mm-hmm. answer a question as it relates directly to our VAR audience. Mm-hmm. So my question today is, you know, when we think about this idea of deep and wide selling, account penetration, digging in deeper, you know, and I feel like, Luke, you've already really touched on this several times, but let's hone it into some talking points. You know, how does working with a vendor like Elo or a distributor like Bluestar and our relationship that we have with one another as well, how does that help VARs to dig in deeper and win and get better business out of their customers?
Well, I'd liken it to a three-legged stool. You have to build something that's sturdy, durable, and it's built for the long term, let's say. And I'm proud that Elo brings some of the best technology, incredible innovation, but we have to make sure we can deliver that. And that's where a partner like Bluestar enables that inventory, that timing, and that communication, let's say. And then furthermore, our VARs know our customers. And but there's this piece where it all has to work together, let's say, to create this sturdy environment where that communication, both to Elo and to Bluestar as an example, has to be lockstep. There also has to be trust. And the idea that no one's going to know my product better than I am. So the idea that you shut the doors to partners that you trust and have something to offer to your customer. And whether that communication goes through Bluestar, it goes to Elo, this is where us working together in partnership opens the trust with your customer, because you've got immediate information, you know what's going on, you have the detail, let's say, of how things work. But I kind of want to stop there and make sure I'm answering the question, but I do look at this as a forming the right partnerships for success to meet your customer's needs.
Dang it, Luke, you took mine. Partnering is the word that I had written down on my sheet, but obviously you can tell that that's an important thing. In all seriousness, I mean, when you look at the organizations, Elo is channel friendly. They totally understand an ecosystem. And I'm so glad you said that word earlier as well, Luke, because it is all about an ecosystem. You know, when you are a reseller, you are not on an island. What working with vendors like Elo who understand the channel, have resources aligned to help enable resellers out there through physical stuff, yeah, like PDFs and stuff like that, but also human resources like Luke and his team and the team of vendor reps that they have out in the field and the specialists that they have. When I was a reseller, one of the very first things that I understood when we started to get into hardware sales, because that was kind of new to us, was leveraging that relationship with the vendor. They have them. They have them, and they're there specifically to help you out. And so the more that you can partner and nurture that relationship, it is going to pay off. Same with a distributor like Bluestar. We are all in on the partnering and wanting to enable our partners through that. We have programs where we try to go out in front of and find software development companies through our Tech Connect program. I mean, it's all about partnering and building that broader ecosystem. It can lead you to paths to grow your business, to expand your business, and find new opportunities, new innovation. Finally, you know, what the partnering does is it taps you in not only to that ecosystem, but the innovation that's happening within that ecosystem. And that can be critical for your long-term success as well. So there you go. Great. Partnering. Yeah.
One other comment, and it's just, and I preach this internally, it's about scale. So people can do stuff, people can do amazing things, but two people can do more. 3 people can do more, 50 people can do more. So you also have to look at your business as a VAR, in my opinion, and look at how best to scale. And it certainly points back to that partnering piece. And I can speak a lot about scale and how to try to achieve that through partnering, through the information that OEMs and Bluestar can provide. So just another comment.
Yeah. You know, I think early on, Luke, you kind of mentioned when you go in and meet with a client, and anytime, you know, I, you know, a lot of salespeople sometimes feel that need to go in and just know everything and be able to rattle it all off, and don't like to be able to say, oh, I don't know something, or maybe either make it up or, you know, just fudge it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head earlier in this idea, and it just comes all back to this partnership and these relationships that you have with, you know, the vendors and the manufacturers and the distributors, to bring in somebody and say, hey, you know what? I'm not the expert on Elo's touch technology. Luke is. He's mm-hmm. going to tell you a little bit about that. Hey, you know, I actually don't know exactly what we can do as far as configuring your display to get it ready to out of the box. Blue Star, they're experts in that. They have their custom config department that does that. I'm going to bring in our expert from Blue Star. They'll tell you all about what they'll be able to do for you in order to roll this out. It's that huge message that you can give to somebody that tells them, this is not just, you're not just, you know, creating this relationship with this guy, even though it is the people sell to people, but it can be people sell to multiple or buy from multiple people kind of thing too. Like, hey, I'm buying from that guy because he knows that guy and that girl and those folks over there, and they're all amazing and they know their stuff and they came in here and just knocked our socks off. Why wouldn't we buy from them at this point?
Well, and I'm going to give you another example of why I think partnering is really important and having an open mind when it comes to that. I fully understand that some resellers are like to box themselves in. They don't really want to talk too much about their innovation to other people, not just competitors, but even some of their quote unquote partners, because they're afraid of letting the cat out of the bag. You know, oh, I'm doing this thing over here and I don't want other people to know. Okay, I get that to a certain degree, and maybe that's appropriate for some innovative solutions. But I can tell you that a lot of business back, you know, in the day came from the ability to work with the partner, work with your ecosystem, make them sure that you're aware of the innovation. So one of the deals that we started getting into was digital signage in healthcare, which was really innovative back in the time. Not a lot of people had it. So we were asked, because we were a provider of those solutions, to be a sounding board, not just a sounding board, but I guess a use case mm-hmm. to other folks, resellers that were nowhere near the area that we were operating right. in. But we were conveying with them, helping them grow, telling them about the solution that we were building, and you know what, all boats rise, because we got some content contracts out of it, stuff like that. So good things can come out of those things. Good things come when partnering happens.
Yeah, definitely.
So, anyway, agreed. Yeah.
Well, that's our value to the bar for the day. We want to wrap up, as always, with our favorite segment of each week on the
yes.
show. What's Tech Connecting with You?
Yep.
This is where we get a chance to talk about some piece of technology, innovation, science, mm-hmm. just something cool and interesting that has caught our attention. Luke, I will start with you. What is Tech Connecting with You this week?
All right. So I was doing some research on CES, and I'm geeking out on these robots.
Oh.
And they're not out yet. I gotta admit, if I can get a robot to do my dishes, pick up around the house, it will be incredible. I get LiDAR, I get how some of this stuff works, so I'm curious to see how it all play out. But the promise that we're really gonna have a digital assistant physically helping us in our space, especially since we're sitting at home quite a bit, it's something to geek out about. And then I got one other one, and I gotta make this plug here. Elo launched its new M50 mobile device. And so when I look at something that's rugged, durable, at a price point you just can't pass up, if you haven't looked at our new M50 product, please reach out, because we've packed so much technology into something that I think will provide some real value to the broader industry, because it connects all of our product platform. It really just cuts the cable and enables you to take the value of Elo anywhere. So that was my other one, but appreciate it.
Yeah, resellers will be geeky on that, I guarantee you.
That's right.
And gosh darn it, if you didn't take another one of my
had the robots thing too?
Robots, it's written right here in my notes. Robots. So before I go into my robots, though, Luke, what were they presenting at the CES? Yeah, so you're saying we're getting close to the Jetsons, right? Where, you know, you got the little robotic assistant that would come over and pick up your clothes off the floor. Rosie?
Yeah.
Are we getting Rosie soon? Is that what we're doing?
So Samsung released a new type of, I'll call it a Roomba, but it's a more capable one that truly maps a room and better understands some of the physical space, let's say. But they also had two different types of robots. One was more of an assistant with a fold-up screen that you could do video conferencing. It's your personal assistant to keep you on track with appointments. It's kind of that daily reminder that can do, you know, multiple reminding type things.
I got you.
The other one, though, was a big arm, and that arm could pour you a glass of wine, dishes. It can pick up around the house. And that got my mind spinning, let's say. That was where I was really geeking out.
I'm with you. I was geeking out on that right about the beginning of the year when Boston Dynamics released their video of their robots dancing to Do You Love Me?
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, we've all seen, if you're a geek at all, you're aware of Boston Robotics. Mm-hmm. You've seen their videos in the past. But, man, that one just took it to a whole new level because it looked CGI. I mean, it looked like there's no way a robot is doing that. It's a little scary. Right? I mean, in the sense that these things were, if you haven't seen that video, just
dance up to you as it's breaking your neck, you know?
Right? just Google Boston Dynamics. You always have that dark side.
I know. And, you know, I watch too much science fiction.
And you're like from Terminator 2 on.
You've been jaded on
robotics. But but just Google that. Do you love me?
And I'd be the first person to probably have one. Actually, my wife is always clamoring for the robot maid. She's like, when there's robot maids, we're going to have one.
We're having one.
And, you know, and I like to tell her, like, you already have a husband who does all the cooking for you practically, doesn't mind cleaning. Like, we're halfway there.
You're replaceable.
I mean, I guess you can't, you know, you have to plug me in to charge me up at night. You know, like, I'm a lot less expensive, but whatever.
Well, in all seriousness, I mean, I think our industry needs to be very sensitive to it because you're going to see it back a house. You're going to see it in warehousing. You're going to see it's already coming.
Yeah.
There and to see what's going to happen in the field of robotics over the next 5 years, I don't think it's a bold claim to say that, yeah, maybe they'll be in our homes, just like a Roomba is. Maybe 5 years from now, it's not going to be uncommon to have some type of assistant in your home doing more than just vacuuming, you know, doing other chores.
I think to Luke's point, like with the whole arm thing, like you're not, again, we're not talking about someone who's literally just going to replace a human being entirely, but something that's more of a helper, something that is an assistant. And especially, you know, you think of elderly people, you think of people with disabilities, how amazing that kind of technology would be to help someone get a little, you know, a little bit more assistance in their life that they didn't have before and be able to feel more comfortable living on their own.
Like, absolutely.
That alone, I think, would make it worth it. So.
Yeah. I'm telling you, a lot of excitement around there. Yeah. But
All right, D, what's tech connecting with you then?
Well, that is.
Was that yours?
That was my tech connecting. Okay. Yeah. You stole it. What about you?
All right.
What
do
you
got? So for me, I have another podcast recommendation, which I feel like I'm always recommending podcasts, which again, you can listen to it after you listen to all of our podcasts.
Yes, only after. Right. And rate us.
When
but anyway.
Yeah, when you're done listening to our podcast, you've given us a 5-star rating and review. Maybe you've listened twice even and told at least 3 friends. Then move over to Spotify, which this is a Spotify exclusive, and it's called 60 Songs That Explain the 90s. Right in my wheelhouse. We've talked about this, I think, before.
Yes.
The 90s is what I consider as my genre of music.
I may
have been a kid in the 80s, but 80s music, I didn't care about music back then. When I got
90s.
Into music, it was the 90s. So this is totally right up my alley. And it is just what it is. It's a guy from The Ringer, I believe, who is basically just doing a deep dive into various songs. The very first one is Alanis Morissette's You Ought to Know.
Mm-hmm.
And he does a little bit of a dive where he talks about the origin of the song.
Oh, cool.
You know, he brings some guests on to talk about, you know, what their perception of it is and like their, you know, or their experience with the baby when they were, you know, a certain age back in the 90s. And then, you know, kind of wraps it all together and gives you a little sample of the song at the end. Fairly short. I think they're like 20 to 30 minute episodes. So far I've listened to that one, Gin Blossoms, Hey Jealousy. Some of the other ones I saw upcoming, I haven't gotten too far in yet, are Mariah Carey, Metallica, the Backstreet Boys. It's going to be a lot of stuff, I think, that's going to ring true to me from that era, stuff that you could not get away from on the radio, the stuff that was very influential. Honestly, I can't wait for Oasis. That is my all-time favorite band.
There you go.
I know it'll just be Wonderwall, which is the song that
everybody knows, right?
Still, it'll be a good conversation.
Yeah. What's it called again?
60 Songs That Explain the 90s.
Boom.
I think it's only on Spotify at the moment, so it's an exclusive one there.
Which, I like
hey,
it.
We're on Spotify, so
you
know, you can go over there and still listen to us.
Right.
And then listen to his other podcast.
There you go.
So. All right. Well, that does it for us today. Luke, thank you so much for being on the show. We appreciate you.
Yeah, great job, Luke.
Today.
Thanks, sir.
I appreciate it, gentlemen. Thank you.
No problem. All right. So as I said, this wraps us up. So until next time, connected. Elo is bringing decades of touchscreen experience to the palm of your hand. Introducing the M50 handheld mobile computer, an enterprise-grade Android device built for efficiency and connectivity. With a 5.5-inch HD touch display, integrated 2D barcode scanner, Android 10 OS, and a rugged design for commercial use, the M50 is ready to seamlessly integrate via ELO View or the MDM of your choice. Long battery life, quick charge, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, or 4G communications, and plenty of accessories make the M50 a bold new choice for enterprises like warehousing, retail, healthcare delivery, and more. To learn more, check out the link in the show notes or contact Blue Stars Elo team.